Okay, so let me start again. Like always, my talk will follow a handout. Here is the handout. I hope you're having, you're holding a copy. Also, I will play it on the screen over my blackboard here. But you probably, it's hard for you to see the details, so you must have the handout. I hope you can see something. Okay? Anyway, so let's start with the actual content. So, sorry, now I'm not on the right window. Okay, so can you read this?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, thanks for inviting me, and I picked a topic that I hoped Vasily would like, and you guys in general would like, there is the risk that you know everything about it already. So, basically, I will tell you how I like to think about an old paper by Vasily, which I learned about from various other sources as well, about sort of an extension of fundamental group things related to virtual knots to have one extra generator. And so basically everything I will tell you factors through or has to do with a single map J. Do you see the J here? Is it visible for you? I think
yes,
I'm pronouncing the letter J correctly. So J is defined by a single picture. Here it is. Basically, it's the crossing the crossings picture. So if you have a crossing, you cross it. You add another line to it. And that does everything, and I will explain how. So basically, I have to tell you what's the domain, what's the target, why does it do everything that I claim it does. But it may well be that you already know it. So if you already know it, then it will be a short talk. We don't have to go on very far. But
we don't quite understand your notation. V plus one W.
So I'll explain it later. Basically, this is a virtual crossing, and this is a W. This happens in W knots. But I'll explain the 1W in a little bit later. But just one thing before that. So just for the choice of the letter, so this is both to honor the Russian origin of this story, but also because graphically, this letter fully describes everything that's in this story, right? It looks exactly like the right-hand side here. So that's the reason for the choice. Anyway, so before I can tell you about Je, I want to tell you a little bit of history. How did I get there? So a word about virtual knots. So what are virtual knots? I know you know it. But I would like, but I want to emphasize a few things about it. So virtual knots are the under algebraic structure underlying the normal presentation of the Rademeister presentation of ordinary knots. Namely, one way to represent ordinary knots, for example, is by a list of crossings. So here is an ordinary knot. Do you know how to, can you view this?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, so I put a dot in the middle of each edge here, and then I number these dots. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then the knot can be represented by a list of crossings. So the first crossing is a crossing X. I think all the crossings, the way I wrote it, are positive. So it's X plus. And it's a crossing that connects, let's say that my convention is to start from the lower, entering lower strands, and then to go counterclockwise. So it's a crossing that connects 3, 1, 4, and 6. So 3, 1, 4, and 6. And then there is a second crossing, x plus, and I suppose it's this one. And it connects 1, 5, 2, and 4. For 1, 5, 2, and 4. And then there is a third crossing, I suppose this one, and it goes 5, 3, 6, 2. So 5, 3, 6, 2. Okay? And then, so basically, a note, if you wish, is an algebraic expression that looks like this. So, a list or a product, you know, of symbols x plus and x minus with indices which really tell how to connect one end to another end. So, the 6 here, it appears twice, and all it really means is that you connect the fourth leg of this to the third leg of that. Okay? And then you mod out by relations, right, Meister 1, 2, and 3. And these relations can also be written in this language because they're also just about, you know, Rademeister 3 is just about some way of connecting three crossings together. So actually, this is not knot theory. Knot theory is when you take this and add the condition, so you say everything that I said so far, and add the condition, and the diagram is planar. Okay? But that's completely unnatural from an algebraic perspective. From an algebraic perspective, adding the condition and the diagram is planar is just extra words. It's algebra doesn't see it, and it's very hard to tell if a diagram is planar or not. So virtual knot theory is the same thing, but without this extra condition, which anyways is unnatural from an algebraic perspective. So let me say it in different words, and now I hope you can see the screen. So virtual knots, or more precisely virtual tangles, because I'm also allowing loose ends, is the circuit algebra generated by two generators, a positive crossing and a negative crossing, modulo three relations, Rademeister 1, Rademeister 2, and Rademeister 3. And in fact, often I drop Rademeister 1, but you know, let's not think about it too much right now. Where the only thing I need to explain is what's a circuit algebra. So a circuit algebra, it's a completely general algebraic object. I think I must have mentioned it before to other people, to people here, but if not, I'll just remind you, a circuit algebra is basically what underlies, for example, an electronic circuit. So it's made of components. So here, the components are crossings. But if it was an electric circuit, the components might have been transistors or resistors or capacitors, right? And then a circuit algebra is basically you take these components and you allow connecting them to each other in all possible ways. It's a bit silly to connect a transistor to a crossing, but it makes sense to connect a transistor to a resistor and a capacitor. So basically, you get all sorts of circuits. And then,
can we do the same with two knots or two-dimensional pieces do not fit into your definition of a circuit algebra?
Two-dimensional pieces do not fit as it is into my definition of a circuit algebra. But that's off topic, you know. My topic right now is ordinary virtual knots.
I know.
Okay. So basically, a virtual knot is a circuit which can be made out of these basic components, like an overcrossing and an undercrossing. And you can connect them to each other in any way you wish, provided you respect orientations. Okay? and then you mod out by the Rider-Meister relations, which can also be written in this language. Okay, a different way to say it is the way I'm showing here. So I hope you can see it. If not, it's on your handout. So maybe I should raise this the camera a bit. Okay. By the way, the pictures here are because Lou Kaufman, from whom who came up with Virtual Knots, Vasily, who found the algebra that I will describe in a moment, and Hans Boden, because I really learned all this algebra from Hans Boden, so I have a particular debt to him. Okay, anyway, so here is my flying pogs picture for Virtual Knots. So first of all, I should tell you what a pog is. So pogs come from a certain kids game, which probably doesn't exist in Russia, but it involves, what? It involves little discs that are marked in various, with little pictures on them, and part of the game is that they end up flying in the air in various places. So, in my POG game, there are two types of POGs. The overcrossing POG and the undercrossing POG. And they're really little discs, cylinders, with a piece of a knot in them. But then, instead of gluing them as if they live in space, I just sort of sprinkle them randomly and connect them, and the blue lines only indicate which end is connected to what, to what end, but these connections are not in space, they are in sort of hyperspace. They're nowhere. In other words, it's an algebraic gadget. It's made of gadgets that look like this, and there is a description of how some ends are connected to some other ends. And then you mod out by the ordinary relations of knot theory. And the ordinary relation, so in particular the Rider-Meister 3 relation, says that if three pogs come together, or if you bring them together in the usual way for Rider-Meister 3, you can pull them apart in the way of the other side of the Rider-Meister 3. But it's completely algebra. There is nothing embedded in this. There is no topology here whatsoever. It's completely algebra. Okay. Now, there is a different presentation of virtually knots, and I think of it as morally wrong. It's correct mathematically. There is nothing wrong with it mathematically, but it's morally wrong, and let me explain it. Okay? So the other presentation is to say, let's take such a picture and project it to the plane, brute force. Okay? Let's just force a projection to the plane. And then there will be some new crossings, say, between these blue connections lines, but these blue connections lines are abstract. They're just indication of one thing is connected to another. So these crossings are not real. So people call them virtual crossings, and then they describe virtual knots as the planar algebra, meaning generated by a positive crossing, a negative crossing, and a virtual crossing, modulo the usual Rider-Meister relations, and then a bunch of further relations that really just say that the virtual crossings don't count. Okay? So, you know, it's a reasonable way to present things the first time you tell somebody about virtual knots. But you have to keep in mind, but one has to keep in mind that these virtual crossings, these crossings are not really there. They're just not there. They're only an artifact of the projection. So I have a prejudice or a deeply held belief, if you wish, that this presentation is in some sense morally wrong. Okay?
So what is M?
M is the mixed relation or the detour move.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, so basically, things in virtual knot theory should never depend on this presentation. I mean, if they depend on this presentation, then there ought to be a way to say it without using this presentation, which would even be nicer. And that's my a priori prejudice. So, sorry, but I have to put in some politics. So, you know, our prejudices, I think, should always be reevaluated. So, I don't know if you recognize this. This is the sort of flag of the, or the gay pride flag. And, you know, when I was a child and I grew up in a small town in Israel, sort of, obviously, everybody around me, and probably including myself, was definitely prejudiced against it. Because, you know, that was the early 70s, it was a different time. And, you know, and I must have been, you know, and people used to tell jokes about this. People used to despise gays and the like. And, you know, by default, that would have been my opinion, too. So, you know, but, you know, prejudices should always be reevaluated. So, so at some point, I thought about it more and realized that there was no real basis behind this prejudice, and at some point, I dropped it. So, and so, you know, that should be the case with any prejudice. So, you know, maybe my prejudice about virtual knots, I should also drop. Okay? So, so then Boden taught me about stuff done by Manturov. And that was a challenge to my prejudice. I mean, I had to re-inspect my thoughts. So let me explain to you what Boden told me about Manturov. So Boden told me that you can define a new group associated with a virtual knot. So it's more or less like the Wirtinger presentation, except a tiny bit different.
So more or less the same talk was in Poland when I first met you, when I was discussing something with Roger Fenn and Hume Wharton. However, not at the language of groups. We were discussing quandals, whether we can charge a virtual crossing, or we can have some extra charge at classical crossing and do nothing in virtual ones.
So,
Formally it was another subject, but spiritually it was the same. So we were trying to understand whether some Alexander quandals or bi quandals, when we do something at classical crossings and something at virtual crossings, are equivalent to those quandals or bi-quandals when we do something at classical crossings and do nothing at virtual crossings. And there were some approaches, you know, maybe the history repeats itself in some other situation. At that time, it was something like Kaufman, Silver, Williams, Savolik, Radford, Roger Fenn, and myself. And so, nowadays, there is something
so
it's related to groups.
It's completely possible that I was present but didn't fully understand. That's one thing. And the other thing is, it's completely possible, as I said at the beginning, that you actually know everything that I have to say. In which case, I don't mind. Let it be a short talk. I want to say something, you know, if you know, I want to make sure that you know what I want to say. If you already know it, then we can just quit. Okay?
We know something, but we are happy to.
Okay.
The second page is extremely interesting. And that's for the first page. We have some something to learn from it. We are happy to go on listening.
So let's start at least with the first page, and let me continue describing what I learned from Hans Bode. So again, what I learned from him about you is, so there is the usual Weirtinger presentation in which sort of you have a generator for each arc and some relation for each crossing, but then there is a variation where you also add you add a new generator, Q, so you get a group whose generators correspond to the arcs of the knot, but an additional generator, Q, and you add a relation corresponding to the virtual crossing. So at the virtual crossing, you add a relation like Z is a conjugate of Y by Q, and W is a conjugate of X by Q inverse. Okay? And similarly, there is a variant of Artin's representations. So there is Artin's representation is a representation of the braid group into the automorphism group of a free group, and then there is a variant, again by Manturov and probably also others, in which you go to the automorphisms of a free group with one further generator called Q, and the ordinary crossings are represented like the usual Artin representation, but the virtual crossings actually act in a non-trivial way. So, you know, it's wonderful, but it completely challenged my prejudices or my deeply held beliefs, because it involves giving a value to the virtual crossing, and to me, the virtual crossings are not there. I mean, they should not play a role in virtual knot theory. They're just artifacts of the projection. They're a consequence of using the wrong presentation for virtual knots. So how come they have values? So that bothered me for a while, and then I found an easy resolution, and it may be that you know this resolution very well. You know something? I think I should shrink the screen because somehow it... Okay, yes. So, and the easy resolution is to change variables. And again, you may have known it all along, but if you change variables, for example, in the Artin presentation and representations, and there is something similar to the Weirtinger style thing. So if you change variables from xi to yi, where yi is a conjugate of xi by q to the I, then the representation becomes it becomes trivial on the virtual crossing. But interesting, but even more interesting, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Actually, I have a question.
Yeah?
I have a question. Have you got anything to do with the multivariable case when we conjugate?
You're rushing ahead, Vasily. Let me go in my order.
Okay.
So, by the way, do you know this? Did you know this? Vasily?
Yeah.
Did you know this?
Yes. As for this, I know this.
Okay.
I know. So far, I haven't yet published it anywhere, but I know this.
Okay, good. So anyway, there is a version in which the virtual crossings are as they should be, meaning trivial. Now, maybe I'll skip the next thing that I wanted to say, I'll skip the next thing I wanted to say, and tell you about the map G that I wanted to tell you about, okay? So, what's going on here? Something is weird. Okay, so maybe one thing before. So, what Vasily has given us is a map mu from virtual braids on n strands, and I'm talking about braids, but there is a similar thing for knots, into the automorphism group of the free group on n plus 1 generators. But it's actually not the whole automorphism group, it's a subset. You get into the basis conjugating automorphisms, which in themselves are the so-called W braids on n plus 1 strands. So therefore, there is a map from virtual braids on n strands to W braids on n plus 1 strands. And I wanted to understand what this map was. And that's J, really. So if you know it already, stop me now and I'll quit. But anyway, so J is, so this is J, the J that I'm going to describe to you. But first, I have to tell you what are W braids, and in general, what are W tangles. So W tangles are virtual tangles, modulo an additional relation, over crossings commute. And one way to write the over crossings commute relation is as written here. And this is the usual way to write it, and it's one of the so-called forbidden moves in knot theory, and it's always a bit confusing because the virtual knot is not the virtual crossing is not really there. So what is this move saying? What it's really saying is that if the middle strand crosses over X and then crosses over Y, then it's the same as first crossing over Y and then crossing over X. And then the better way to write it is as follows. So you have two crossings and the third strand, and the statement is that if the third strand goes in such a way, abstractly, so that first it goes over X and then over Y, it's the same as if it first goes over Y and then goes over X. Okay? So now we know what W knots are. And I should have said that the fundamental group of a knot complement is in fact well defined on W tangles, and likewise the Artin representation is actually defined on W braids and not just on ordinary braids, simply by using the exact same definitions, and you find that these relations are satisfied anyway. Okay? So everything works. Okay, so now it's time to tell you what J is. Okay, this is the main point of my talk. Okay, J is the following thing. So J is a map from virtual knots to W knots, and all it does, or from virtual tangles to W tangles, and all it does is you take all the crossings of the original knot and you cross them one more time. So you add an extra strand, call it Q, write it in red and call it Q, and you let it cross over each of the old crossings. And a few comments. So first of all, it looks like a three-layer crossing, and that's probably the nicest way to draw it, and it's also the way that's closest to the Russian letter Zhe. Okay? But really, you could deform it a little bit in either direction by a Rademeister 3 move, or by what amounts to the equivalence that corresponds to Rademeister 3 move, and this just decomposes into three ordinary crossings. So it's not really a triple point. Okay, more important, so you see, you can ask, so I have this extra strand Q, how do I connect it between its various appearances. So let me explain. So suppose I have a... Okay, suppose I want to apply je to the virtual knot drawn over here. I guess it's a long virtual knot. Okay, so I add an extra strand here, and my convention is that since the extra strand is red and it's distinguished, I don't bother to indicate that it's above everything else. You should understand that it's above everything else. So in this picture, I made gaps to indicate that it's above everything else, but that's not necessary. It's clear from the... It's just the, whenever I draw something in red, it means that it's above everything else. So I add this extra strand here, and I add the extra strand here. And now you can ask yourself, how do I connect these two? I want it to be a single strand. And the answer is, it's completely irrelevant. That's the point of W knots. That's the point of imposing the overcrossing commute relation.
I understand formally that if you use the non-break version of the third Rademeister move, it suffices to get the invariance. But I don't feel what to do with the break version of the third Rademeister move. So we can have something. You say that something is irrelevant, but I don't see how to connect red parts when I red pieces when I have the braid-like version of the third Rademeister move.
I'm not talking about the third Rademeister move yet. I'm still defining je. The definition of je is wherever you have a picture, you know, whenever you have a knot diagram, it's going to have a number of arrows marked on it, and then you connect them together to a single strand whichever way you want, because it just doesn't matter. First of all, you connect ends to tails. Well, you could say virtually, but to me it just means I don't even need to say it. And secondly, it doesn't matter in which order you connect heads to tails, because this is the W relation, the overcrossings commute relation. Okay? So now, I'll get to Rademeister move soon. Okay? So now back to now formally, what have I done? I've defined a map from virtual knots, virtual tangles, in fact, on n strands to W tangles on n plus one strands. It clearly preserves the braid structure if it's a braid. So equally well, it's a map from virtual braids on n strands to W braids on n plus one strands. So this is the map I was seeking before. And finally, in fact, it's a bit more general, because in everything that I do, and that I will do in a minute, you actually only use the overcrossings commute relation on the red strand. So you can impose it only on the red strand. So in fact, you could be slightly more general and say that you have a map from virtual tangles on n strands to tangles with n virtual strands and one W strand. So one strand on which overcrossing commute is imposed, or likewise for braids. It's not, I don't know what to do with it, but it's true. Okay, now I have a few claims. So first of all, je is well defined. I mean, otherwise it's pointless. So it satisfies the Rademeister move. Second, on U-links, je is somehow trivial. It factors. So on ordinary knots, U means usual. So on usual links, je does nothing. Okay? Je does not respect overcrossings commute. And je recovers the virtual group and the Artin presentation. So the Manturov virtual group and the Manturov representation. Namely, the virtual group of a node K is the ordinary fundamental group of Z of K, and the Artin representation of and the Manturov representation is simply the Artin representation composed with Z. Okay, so Z contains everything. Okay? And in fact, even better, so whenever you have an invariant of two component W naughts, so now I'm restricting my attention to n is equal to 1. Okay? So whenever you have an invariant of two component W naughts, you can pull it back and get an invariant of virtual knots, of ordinary virtual knots. Okay? In particular, so likely, but I haven't verified it, but all sorts of two-variable Alexander polynomials for virtual knots are just pullbacks of the multivariable Alexander polynomial on the two-component W knots that you get by applying Z. I haven't checked it, but it's likely true. And secondly, so on the next page of the handout, I describe a Wills valued invariant, so a certain non-commutative, an invariant valued in some, a certain space of non-commutative power series. Now, if you're talking about one component, then being valued in non-commutative power series is irrelevant because you have only one variable, so non-commutativity doesn't mean anything. But if you're talking about a two-component link, the non-commutativity makes it a very, very strong invariant. So I have a map from virtual knots on one component to W knots on two components. So therefore, so this is Jean. So therefore, if I compose it with this Wills invariant, which goes into cyclic words in two letters, then I get a non-commutative invariant of ordinary virtual knots, and that's new. Okay? Anyway, before I can tell you about all of this, I have to prove the four claims that I made. Okay? So first of all, and they're all completely, sorry, they're essentially trivial. Okay? So, first of all, I need to show that this Z map is invariant under Rademeister 1. But that's obvious. I mean, if you have a, before the Rademeister 1, the picture looks like this. You add a red bar on top, a red strand on top. You can slide it out. This is normal Rademeister theory. Okay? You can slide it out, so it's a, so the result does not is invariant under Rademeister 1. Okay? Similarly, there are two types of Rademeister 2s to consider. So there is the braid-like type. So and there is the cyclic type. So in the braid-like type, the Z-map, so the left-hand side of the Rademeister move will look like this. The Z-map will add an extra strand right here. I am free to connect this extra strand whichever way I want. I am free to connect the ends whichever way I want, so I will connect it this way. But now I have a three-layered Rademeister 2. So this one is below everything, this one is in the middle, red is above everything. So I can slide it apart. So this is equal to this. And, you know, strands don't really exist, only crossings exist. So really what I'm saying is that I've eliminated two crossings from the red strand. This is sort of a nothing. This is just how things connect. So this is Je of the other side of the Rademeister 2. So therefore it's invariant under Rademeister 2. This is for the braid-like Rademeister 2. For the cyclic Rademeister 2,
So one strand is oriented up, the other strand is oriented down. The corresponding two arrows will be one going this way, the other going this way. Again, I'm free to connect whichever way I want. I connect this way. Now red slides out, and that's this, and I got invariants under Rademeister 2. Finally, for Rademeister 3, so I think I've shown here the cyclic Rademeister 3. So I have three arrows. I can connect them whichever way I want. I will connect them like this. Now I can slide it out, and I'm free to perform the Rademeister 3, and the same thing happens on the other side. Now you can ask, and you already asked, about the braid-like Rademeister 3.
Yes.
So I could show another picture using the braid-like Rademeister 3. But I don't need to, because the braid-like Rademeister 3 follows from all of these moves.
I understand it formally, but I don't feel the braid-like Rademeister 3. My question is just because I don't essentially feel how to make a multi-component version of Gen, how to make many components of the red curve. Because, you know, well, of course, I'm running very much ahead of what you're talking now. But as for these simple conjugations, well, we can do everything formally when we have many variables, and it can be done. But many components,
yeah. So I hear you.
It seems like we should do something with ij component, jk and kl. I want to see what to do.
I hear you, and maybe it's time that I answer. So the answer is, I also don't know how to make a many variable J. Okay? And there might be, so since you have never written, or at least I don't know that you have written, the many variable version of your story, I mean, either there is some small mistake somewhere, or there is yet another phenomenon that has to be, or I don't understand what it is, and there is some yet another phenomenon that I need to incorporate, but I really can't discuss it because I haven't seen it.
You know, there was a story that Alex Tarantan was, he submitted a paper to our seminar special issue, and I was reading and discussing it very actively, and actually he found that this invariant you're now discussing is not faithful. So there is a kernel in this braid in this braid representation, and actually then after that I told him about this multivariable case. I kept it in my pocket because I still believe that this one variable case should be faithful. But when Oleg told me he found it was not, I told him, well, here is something I had in my pocket. So we discussed it with Oleg, and Oleg mentioned it in his paper. And so I think it's written in his paper, not in mine.
So Oleg, no, it's not in his paper. Oleg mentioned to me the many variable thing, and I do not, he mentioned to me that you have something like that, and we could not reconstruct it.
Well, that means that we need further discussions that time, something like 15 or 14 years ago, I had some hope to recover something faithful, some faithful invariant or complete invariant of Virchow's. Now we have Oleg's one, and I do want to know something, algebraic, where to recover it from. So the candidate with one variable fails. So I want to understand what should be behind the candidate with many variables.
So I totally agree with you, but I don't even know the many variable thing. I cannot comment on it. So I hereby challenge you to write it up. It's up to you.
Yeah, sure. And of course, our conversation encourages me more to
Let me continue. So why is this trivial? By the way, I mean, is this je completely familiar to you? Maybe I'm totally wasting your time.
No. Since today morning when I read this paper, many things became clear, much more clear to me. But as for page one, I think we're more or less we have more or less finished page one, and we have any further things on page one.
So no, I still want to tell you why it's trivial on U notes.
Okay.
So the triviality on U notes is also trivial. Okay, is easy. So here is a big U knot. I drew it in black here. And then I marked in red all the crossings that J adds. Okay? And then it's very easy to check that in every face of this knot, the number of incoming arrows is equal to the number of outgoing arrows. So basically, you can pair them, and you get a union of cycles, as drawn here. And then, but these cycles are now ordinary U components that hover above, that fly above the rest of the knot. So you can just slide them out, and therefore the extra component factors out, is independent, is not linked with the rest. This is the quick version. I could add a few words if you're confused. But basically the triviality on U knots is obvious. So it's really only an invariant of genuinely virtual knots. Okay. Now, I should say also that it doesn't satisfy overcrossings commute, and simply because it doesn't, you know, you try to prove that it satisfies overcrossings commute and it doesn't. And as for proving that your things factor through je, well, it's routine. You just write down you just trace the definition and everything works. Except my conventions are opposite to yours, and I, when I made the handout, I wasn't careful. So it's tricky, but only on conventions level. Okay, and that's all I have to say.
So what about page two?
Page two, I've put it only as an advertisement. So, okay, let me say a few things about page two. Okay? So, first of all, if you look at the top of page two, there is a URL, and in this URL, there is a video version of this talk, of a talk on page two. So page two is documented in some video sense. The other thing is, it's in my papers, knotted balloons and hoops, etc. So if you look at, I have a paper with a long title, and the title begins with knotted balloons and hoops. And if you look at that paper, this is essentially there. Anyway, this said, I can still describe it a little bit if you wish. Should I?
Yes, I think you should.
Okay. Because you see, it's somehow not the point of my talk. The point of my talk was to introduce je. I only wanted to introduce je and to explain that everything factors through it. Everything in a bunch of papers by yourself and Hans Boden and
probably the people who are doing two-variable Alexander polynomials, all of that just factors through J. It's a trivial consequence of the existence of J, which in itself is trivial.
Okay, anyway, so let me tell you about omega.
But first I need to give you some preliminary... Omega is complicated, okay?
So, first I need to give you some preliminaries from algebra,
okay? So, or from combinatorics. So, you know what, maybe I will not follow the handout, but just do it on the blackboard. So, consider the space of one loop Jacobi diagrams with colored ends. So what does it mean? It means that you have a cycle, and on top of this cycle, there must be a cycle. Okay? But then on top of this cycle, there are trees. There could be more stuff, and that stuff is trees. So, you know, you could have trees here and basically more trees. Okay? Maybe even one here. Well, maybe one here too. Okay? So, and consider these diagrams modulo anti-symmetry. So the vertices are anti-symmetric in the usual way. And IHX, and again, do I need to introduce IHX? Probably not, but it's the relation written here anyway. Okay? Oh, and I should have said that everything is oriented. So, and all the trees are oriented towards the cycle. The cycle is oriented, well, it's combinatoric, so it's oriented. It doesn't mean anything to say counterclockwise or clockwise. And I should have also said that the leaves are colored. So if it's a three-component link, they will be colored 1, 2, and 3, but of course possibly with repetitions. Okay? So this space is really isomorphic to a much simpler one. Basically, you can apply IHX on every edge that connects to the cycles. So if you apply IHX here, you get rid of one vertex which is off the cycle, and you get and the vertex on the cycle splits and becomes two in two different ways. So at the end, you can reduce to diagrams that look like wheels with colors marked, whatever, okay? And then you can reduce no further. So so the space is really isomorphic to the space of cyclic words on a certain alphabet, maybe with n letters. So cyclic words just means a word in the alphabet, but cyclic, okay? So I claim that there is an invariant of W tangles into this space. So I claim that there exists an invariant omega going from W tangles on n strands to these cyclic words on n generators. So by the way, this means that if you compose with J, then you get a map from virtual knots or virtual long knots, so virtual tangles with one strand, into cyclic words on two generators, which is kind of, in some sense, exponentially more powerful than, say, the multivariable Alexander polynomial, because it's non...
So why long? Why do you need long versions?
Well,
So the very last words of your second question.
Why do I need long virtuals? You know, first of all, let's go back into prejudices. Okay? So I think long virtual knots are more right than round virtual knots. And in general, tangles are more right than links, in the sense that they carry a much more interesting algebraic structure. So, you know, round virtual knots are, you know, there's nothing you can do with them. There are no operations. Long virtual knots, you can do things with them. So I'm actually, I don't see it as a disadvantage or anything. I see it as the more natural thing. Second, you know, or another point, so round things are more or less like conjugacy classes in a group, as opposed to group elements. So they are constructed objects, they are not the fundamental objects. Anyway, out of prejudices, so just to answer your question, why long? Because the description that I'm going to tell you of the invariants, of the invariant necessitates a tangle. You know, it works for tangles, not for knots, not for links. And if I want to get a tangle, then as an output of J, then I have to start with a long knot. Otherwise I don't know where to cut open the original component. And now you can ask, why do I need a tangle for omega? And the answer is in the details, which I haven't told you yet. Okay? So anyway, what's omega? So I can describe omega, in a sort of essentially one picture. And here it is. Okay? So, this is the knot version, and then there is also a tangle version. So, suppose you have a virtual knot, a W knot. First of all, I turn it into a Gauss diagram. I write it as a Gauss diagram. Then, I make copies of each arrow in the virtual diagram. So the first arrow, this one, I make k copies of it. So now I have k parallel copies of this arrow. Okay?
And I don't quite understand what you mean by an arrow without a sign.
Sorry, I had them. Yes, I hear you, but
here downstairs.
So sorry, I had a technical issue.
So here you have arrows without signs, without plus or minus. What does it mean?
I'll answer in a minute. After I succeed to reconnect. My screen went dead. Okay, so first of all, on the left-hand side, I only marked the negative sign. So the arrows without signs here are really marked with plus.
Okay.
Okay? The arrows on the right really have no signs on them. They are arrows with no signs. It's a different story. It's a map into arrows with no signs. I will explain where the sign go in a minute. Okay? So, I make k copies of the first arrow. Here it is. There are k copies. The second arrow, I make L copies of it. So here it is, there are L copies, but L here is 1 in the example.
And the last arrow, I make m copies of it, and here it is with m copies. Okay?
Now, I follow you.
Now, I sum over k, l, and m going from 0 to infinity. And this is where the sign come in. So the arrows in the Gauss diagram that had plus in them come with plus to the k. The arrows in the Gauss diagram that had a minus on them come with minus to the k, to the corresponding number of duplicates. Okay? So the signs come in here. And then I divide by a product of factorials. And I haven't finished describing the diagram on the right. Okay? Mm-hmm. So to complete the description of the diagram on the right, so everything that I did happens above a green line, which corresponds to the original skeleton component. But now let me describe what I do below this green line. So below this green line, okay, first of all the arrow tails I pull out to the left. And that's why I need a long knot, because there need to be a left. Okay, there need to be a beginning. Okay? So I pull these arrow tails straight to the left. This one here, I pull it to the left. These two arrow tails, I pull to the left. And the arrow heads, I drop down and connect them by a vertex to any one of the arrow tails below them. So it's a big sum. Okay? So I get, so what you see here is a big sum of diagrams. Now, all the edges in these diagrams are oriented, and all the vertices are two in, one out. It's very easy to check. And it's easy to check that if you have a graph with only two in, one out vertices, and with all univalent ends being tails, because all univalent ends here are tails, then this graph must be a union of graphs like this. So if you have it, again, if you have a two in, one out directed graph with whose univalent ends are only tails, then it must be a union of things like this. So now, restrict your attention to the one component case. So if you get more than one component, send it to zero. Ignore it. And what you have is a big sum of diagrams like this one. But each diagram like this one is a cyclic word, or a linear combination of cyclic words. So overall, I got a big sum of cyclic words. Okay? Okay, so this was the one component case. In the many component case, you do something similar. So again, you start from a Gauss diagram, which is now on many components, and you turn it into a sum in a similar way, in exactly the same way, and then each summand is the same as before, except that I have sort of two green lines, and I make the same construction under each one of them. But now the tails come in two types, the tails under the first green line and the tail under the other green line. So this tail I label A, and the other tails I label B, where A and B correspond to the components of the original tangles, and then I now get a big sum of cyclic words in two letters, A and B. So this is the invariant. So theorem, this is an invariant. Okay, first of all, even before, it looks messy, but it's actually completely computable. So for example, if you compute it for the Borromean tangle, you get a big linear combination of cyclic words, which can be denoted as wheels with colors. So this is the actual output for the Borromean tangle, and I can compute it to a much higher degree. And if you want more details about how the computation happens, you have to go to this citation. Okay? And I guess I could prove invariants, but I think I'm probably losing you. So I think maybe, again, I'm not comfortable proving invariants right now, basically. It's easy. There is nothing hard about it, but not now.
Okay, so thank you very much. Are there any further questions to the speaker? So Igor, maybe, are you still there?
Yeah.
So Igor, maybe you have any questions to concerning the talk?
No, I haven't.
Not so far. So we have one more remote participant. Well, so we are really happy to see you here, and we will be happy to go on interacting with your seminar and with your colleagues. So this way or any other ways. So thank you very much again.
Okay. So see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.